On February 4th, four people affiliated with the Catholic Workers Movement broke into a site near Blackberry in Itasca County, where Enbridge Energy Company operates valves that control the flow of crude oil through pipelines that follow the Highway 2 corridor across northern Minnesota. The four, Allison Pullman, Brenna Inglada of Cuba City, Wisconsin, and Michelle Narr from Duluth, and Daniel Ildurum from Viroqua, Wisconsin, tried to shut down two of the pipelines carrying crude oil extracted from tar sand pits in northern Alberta, Canada. They used bolt cutters to cut locks and chains, but did not succeed in breaking the hardware that protected the valves before they were arrested by Itasca County deputies. The four identify themselves as climate change activists intent on using acts of civil disobedience like this to stop the release of carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases causing global warming. Last week, the four defendants testified in a hearing at the Itasca County Courthouse before Judge Heidi Chandler. They were questioned under oath by their lawyers and cross-examined by Itasca County prosecuting attorney David Schmidt. Scott Hall, our senior correspondent, joins us in the studio. He attended the hearing. Scott, thanks for being here.
Yep, good.
Even though the four defendants were unable to turn the valves, they did succeed in temporarily stopping the flow of oil. How did that happen?
Well, after they broke into the site, they had a fifth person working with the group. That person wasn't at the site, and they called Enbridge and told them about the break-in. Enbridge then used their remote control system to shut down two lines, lines 3 and 4. The defendants, who identify themselves as the four necessity valve turners, they live streamed their actions and expected to be arrested. So it was planned.
Why did they choose that site?
You know, they knew the two lines they wanted to shut down carried oil from Canadian tar sands. And they describe that, and others have described it, as the most carbon-intensive and damaging form of oil extraction. And, you know, the Blackberry site is very rural, and it's pretty easy to get to, so that may be reasons as well.
So these four necessity valve turners, as they call themselves, they're affiliated with the Catholic Workers Movement. Tell us about that organization.
Okay, the Catholic Workers Movement was founded by left-wing activists about 85 years ago during the Depression. It's not officially part of the Catholic Church, but these four were influenced in part by Pope Francis's 2015 encyclical on the environment, specifically the connection between burning fossil fuels and climate change. And there are about 200 loosely affiliated Catholic worker communities in the United States, and they all share a commitment to nonviolence and social justice causes like ending racism and poverty. Many of the Catholic workers choose voluntary poverty for their lifestyle. They pray, they offer hospitality to homeless, exiled, and hungry people. And three of these four defendants, in this case, live on subsistence farms in southern Wisconsin, and they protest injustice and war, racism, violence of all forms, and they tend to conspicuously attach religious meaning as well as religious symbols to their actions, which they did at the Blackberry site.
So they call themselves the four necessity valve turners. Why is necessity in there?
Yeah, good question. They want to use something, I just learned about this, they want something called the necessity defense in their trial. And the necessity defense is used by someone who says they were faced with a situation that requires them to do something illegal in order to prevent a greater harm. The serious harm in this case is the damage being caused by climate change. It's also called a term we might be more familiar with, lesser of two evils defense. They will claim their illegal act was the lesser of two evils. But first they have to persuade the judge to allow them to use testimony from climate change experts to support their necessity defense and in essence to justify their act of civil disobedience.
So what happened at this hearing in Itasca County last week?
Well, it went about 3 hours, and all four gave individual testimony. They're on the stand 30 to 45 minutes each. Their attorneys asked them to tell a bit of their life stories, specifically what events in their life led to their decision to commit this act of civil disobedience. They emphasized their concern for their children and future generations, their connection to the land they farm, their religious commitment to nonviolence, and their commitment to caring for the environment. And one defendant, Michelle Narr from Duluth, said the 2012 flood in Duluth Pope Francis's encyclical on the environment in 2015, and the explosion, you may remember this, last year at the Husky Oil Refinery in Superior. That happened last year, and that strengthened her resolve to join this action. And two of the defendants had participated in Dakota Access Pipeline protests in North Dakota and elsewhere, and they also participated in the moratorium campaign against frack sand mining in parts of southwestern Wisconsin. Excuse me. That frack sand is used in the extraction of oil and gas from fracking operations, and Wisconsin apparently has some sand mines that are very useful for this. They all said they took this action and have been part of other protests because they think there's a limited time to address the dangers posed by climate change. They believe our political leaders will not respond to the threat and that the political system is controlled by corporate interests like the fossil fuel companies.
So if Enbridge hadn't shut down the two lines, would they have succeeded in shutting them off at the site?
Well, the prosecuting attorney pushed them on this a little bit, and it's really hard to say because they didn't, for one, and apparently it was fairly easy for them to gain access to the valves, but they said it was very difficult for them to remove a protective collar, and so they failed to get to the valves in that way before they were arrested. It seemed to me that the defendants and their attorney wanted to clearly establish that all four prepared for the action very carefully. They said they studied the valve system ahead of time, and they learned enough about the valve system to disable it safely, and that's because they intended to do no harm to others, as well as the environment, by causing damage to the equipment that might cause an oil spill. So they made no pretense of being innocent of the charges, but there's one felony charge for aiding and abetting attempted damage to pipeline property. There's also one fourth-degree misdemeanor charge of aiding and abetting criminal damage to property. The felony charge carries a maximum of 5 years and $10,000 fine, maximum 5 years in prison. Misdemeanor has a maximum sentence of 90 days and a $1,000 fine. And when asked if they did this for publicity, the prosecution asked them this. They said no. The purpose was to disrupt the flow of tar sands. And so when they asked if they felt they succeeded, they said yes, because they had at least temporarily stopped the flow of oil through the two pipelines.
So what was the focus of the prosecuting attorney's cross-examination?
The prosecuting attorney asked each if before this action they took, had they explored lawful ways to protest, like writing and petitioning their state and federal elected officials and agencies. You know, we hear about the hearings a lot from Public Utilities Commission, Department of Commerce, the DNR, the Army Corps. They all have these hearings and they all have these opportunities. So the prosecution wanted to ask them, are you guys just kind of flying off the handle here, or have you really made a sincere effort to legally stop the flow of oil? They also asked if they recognized the state and federal government's authority to monitor and regulate the energy industry. They did. They reluctantly said yes. That's kind of how I read the tone of their voice. But again, they made their case for their actions on religious and moral grounds and the necessity to break the law to prevent a greater harm that political leaders refuse to address.
What do you think the purpose of that line of questioning was?
Well, number one was, I think, just to clearly establish they're guilty of the charges, because the prosecutor wants to get a guilty plea. And I think, so, as I mentioned a moment ago, the prosecutor wanted to establish that they had premeditated, but they'd also done other acts of protest. And at least one of the other defendants had been arrested for a civil disobedience act. So that, I think, definitely to clearly establish they're guilty of the charges.
We're learning more about the necessity valve turners. They were part of a hearing last week at Itasca
Correct.
County Courthouse. So what happens now?
Okay. The defense asked, wants to use that necessity defense. So the attorneys for the defendants asked the judge for time to submit written statements from climate change experts that would be used in the client's defense. The judge gave them 2 weeks, and the judge will rule on the admissibility of this testimony. The affidavits could be used in officially in testimony in their trial. And so the judge will say, if the judge says it's admissible, it will be part of their defense. If the judge says it isn't, there could be some procedural things that go on. That's going to be, after the procedural things, after the judge's decision, procedural things, it's going to be at least 2 or 3 months, maybe even longer, before the trial actually proceeds.
And you'll stay on this case? Was it interesting to be there?
Oh, my. Yeah, it really was fascinating to see how this necessity defense is presented and how it's tried to be worked into. Because it does give a forum for a more thorough discussion of climate change in a legal setting.
Scott Hall reporting on the trial of the four protesters who broke into a site near Blackberry last February, where Enbridge Energy has valves controlling the flow of crude oil from Canada to a refinery in Superior, Wisconsin, and other Midwest refineries. You can send us your feedback, comments at kaxc.org. Thanks, Scott.
You bet.
Coming up, we'll have Don Bosey. We're finding out more about David Joyce this morning.